Welcome to episode one of the Squawker Talker podcast, where we're going to be discussing the big issues that are going on in football at the moment and attempting to answer some of the questions behind them using stats and statistics and other stories and so on. My name is Greg Evans. I'll be talking you through today's pod, and I'm joined here today by Squawker's social media director, James McManus.
Hello.
We've got Squawker's features editor, Greg Johnson.
Hello.
And we've got well-known internet celebrity, football personality, whatever you want to call him, Squawker Dave.
Oh, thanks, Greg. That's a lovely, lovely intro. How are you, mate?
I'm very well, thanks. So the January transfer window has just concluded, and in all honesty, it wasn't the most exciting, was it? But it was Stoke City who spent the most on a single player for the entire window, when they spent $18.3 million on Gianelli Imbula from Porto. Dave, what can you tell us about him?
He's a player that plays a sort of number six role for Bielsa at Marseille last season. Obviously at Porto, he's not had the best 6 months, but before that he was so, so dominant, played in front of a back three or back four, depending on the system, but he just ran the show. If you take out the PSG midfielders, only Tolisso completed more passes in Liga that season. He's a player I really like, a player that can get himself out of danger really easy. Completed more take-ons than any central midfielder in Europe's top five leagues that season. So he's a player that can just shift it, go, and it really changes the momentum. For me, he's a massive, massive upgrade on Glenn Whelan, who's currently playing that position for Stoke. So if you can see Mbula sitting next to Jeff Cameron, that is a very, very solid, aggressive central midfield pairing.
James, how much did the Britannia Stadium cost?
$14.7 million, so they've actually spent more money on Mbula than they have building an entire stadium, which is a bit ridiculous.
It's bonkers, isn't it, really? But they've been at Britannia Stadium for a while now. It's a nice little ground for them.
I think what Stoke didn't do properly in the summer is they never really replaced Nzonzi, who went to Sevilla.
Yeah, definitely.
They've missed a guy who just keeps things ticking over. Like Dave said, Glenn Whelan's a good player. Like he's Premier League standard. He'll give you 7 out of 10 every week, but Mbula's that extra level. He's a top 8 player, and he just offers them something a bit more, really.
Shame they couldn't just get a striker in, isn't it?
I think Mame Birambidis is a great sort of reserve type striker. They've got Bojan, they've got Afolai, they've got Shaqiri on Arnautovic. They're all chipping in. Mm. They're probably one of the best teams in the Premier League for goals spread out within the team.
Greg?
Yeah, I think they've kind of got their forward options sorted now with Arnautovic, Shaqiri, Bojan. You've got Butland in goal, and you've got quite a good few interesting defenders there. Shawcross is a very dominant centre-back. Mm-hmm. You've got Munezier, who's a very good ball-playing defender. And is it Walshire?
I
can never say his name. He's been very good as well for them.
Granite.
I think the problem they've had is in midfield, where the class at either end of the team hasn't quite flooded through yet. And I think by signing Mbula, they're starting to kind of bring the kind of quality Hughes had looked for elsewhere in the team into the middle of the park.
It's a big statement. I think he could have easily slotted into any of the big teams in the Premier League.
I think it shows as well the sort of pull Mark Hughes has, the sort of respect he carries within the game.
Yeah, definitely.
You wouldn't expect Stoke to go out and sign a Porto player for $18 million, even 3 years ago, even when Hughes first took over the job. But now he must have great contacts within the game. He's such a good manager. He's so underrated.
And I think it also says a lot about the Premier League TV deal now. That we can, even the mid-table, and that's no disrespect to Stoke, but even the mid-table clubs, and even like the relegation battlers can actually outspend some of the biggest clubs in Europe, including teams fighting for the title in places like Portugal, the Netherlands and elsewhere. I mean, I think Newcastle were the biggest spenders overall, weren't they?
Yeah, they spent more money, I think, than all of Serie A combined.
And La Liga, I think, as well.
Yeah, and La Liga,
which is madness.
Even ahead of China, who went on a massive shot.
We'll talk a bit more about China later. I think the biggest story in Deadline Day wasn't even in regards to a player, it was actually a manager, and it was the announcement that Pep Guardiola will be taking over from Manuel Pellegrini at Manchester City in the summer. I presume we're all very excited to see the great man in the Premier League. Wow. But is City the right club for him?
I think, yeah. I mean, they've basically been building for this for the last 3-4 years. They've got in all the executives, pretty much. He worked with at Barcelona. Mm-hmm. So Chiqui Bergiristein, Ferran Soriano. They've got a load of youth coaches and directors in the youth side of things that also worked with him, and scouts as well. I think you look at the type of players they've been buying. They're very Guardiola type players. He liked De Bruyne when he was at Bayern Munich. He wanted to sign him from Wolfsburg. They went to City. There's also talk they're going to try and get Leroy Sané, another player Pep's shown interest in, and Weigl as well, Dortmund, another player Pep's shown interest in. As a United fan, I'm sure Dave will agree with me, it's quite terrifying because, I mean, he's getting paid, what, $20 million a year? He is ultimately the best manager in the world at the moment. And I think he's just going to take City up to the level that they've been building towards, and they haven't quite got there yet because they haven't had a manager to fit their ambitions.
Unfortunately, you can't see my face as this is a podcast, but my head was in my hands. Mentioned Julian Weigl, one of the best young defensive midfielders in world football, absolutely revolutionising this Borussia Dortmund team, becoming the holder, like sort of a Sergio Busquets. Then Leroy Sané as well, a player of such quality, been directly involved in 8 goals in the Bundesliga this season, 4 goals, 4 assists.
And how old is he?
He's 19 years old. He's a top talent. He's so quick on the break. We saw a fantastic goal he scored against Real Madrid in the Champions League this season. Just fantastic talent. And if City can get some of these players, obviously Paul Pogba as well as another player who's been linked, who for me this season has really stepped up to that next level. I questioned his consistency last season. The Champions League, he was massively exposed against Real Madrid. Carvajal in the first half just absolutely ruined him. He wasn't getting out there, he wasn't doing his job. But this season they've switched to a 3-5-2 and he's really dictating the play. He's sort of their playmaker, the link between their midfield and their attack, obviously Dybala and Morata or Mandzukic. So if they can get Pogba, they can get, you know, any of these players, it's going to take City to that next level. But where's Yaya Toure going to go?
I think Yaya will probably go to PSG. It's one last payday. They can probably do with him. Mm-hmm. But I think people underestimate the job Guardiola's got in his hands. Mm-hmm. City's spine is pretty old now. Like, the company's injured a lot. They haven't really got a centre-half pairing, let alone a partner for a company. Both their right-backs are over 30. Both their left-backs are pretty ropey. Yaya's over 30, Fernandinho's 30, David Silva's 30 now. So he's got, and really their squad depth isn't the greatest. No. So he's got, everyone's expecting to win the title at a canter first season. I think it might take him 2 or 3 years to get it right.
Right. Interestingly enough, they had the highest average age in the Champions League last season. So as Maka said, their squad is getting really, really old. And it's going to be, you know, like I said, Yaya, you question the centre-halves as well. You know, the Guardiola's had a lot of top-class centre-halves he's going to be dealing with. Otamendi and Mangala, and then an injured Vincent Kompany. So there's going to be some big spending for me in City and for City in the summer.
Yeah. I said just then that Pep Guardiola was the first manager they've had to reach taking up to that level, and I don't mean that to sound like a slight against Pellegrini, because I actually think Pellegrini is a really great manager. Mm-hmm. But he's almost the kind of manager that you see the clubs like Bayern Munich going for after they've had a kind of a builder. Like Pep Guardiola, he's more of a manager, like almost like Carlo Ancelotti as well. I think I would place Pellegrini in that kind of bracket. And I think he's dealt with the whole impending arrival of Guardiola really well. And I'd expect him to go to another big team, actually, and maybe, you know, take them on from a further along in their journey than City are at the moment.
The players love him at City. I think Yaya would have left 2 years ago if he didn't have Pellegrini as his manager.
Definitely.
And, like, Aguero, you have to consider he might be getting paid a big wage, but he really should be playing for a Barcelona or a Real Madrid.
Super club,
definitely.
He is top 3 out and out strikers in the world.
Definitely.
And he's playing for a team that can't guarantee him a title every year. Mm-hmm. So he wouldn't be at City now if it weren't for Pellegrini. So Guardiola does have a massive thanks to Pellegrini. Just like, thanks for keeping these players here in the first place.
But I do wonder whether those players who maybe have said, well, I'm going to leave, I wonder if they've been told that, look, the long-term project is to get Guardiola.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Basically build an empire like Ferguson did.
Yeah.
Have this kind of, it's terrifying for us as United fans, but kind of put all the investment into the academy, the group of clubs they've now bought all around the world, and really build that seat of an empire at City, where they could become as dominant as Barcelona or a Bayern or maybe even a PSG.
Pellegrini apparently said he knew about this a month ago, and he handled himself very well when he announced it to the press.
He just sort of got up and went, okay, bye then.
Yeah, it definitely shows the class of the man. I think we all want to see him. We all want to see him get another big job in England, hopefully.
Well, his agent came out this week and said, oh, this is the competition that excites Manuel most. He wants to stay in the Premier League. So I'm thinking, where could that possibly mean? Like, the Chelsea job's the only real one that's up for grabs. He can't get the United job now.
No.
Arsenal's not coming up. Klopp's not going anywhere. Pochettino's not going anywhere. Maybe he's counting on Pochettino getting the United job and him getting the Spurs job. Something like that.
Everton?
What about when Mark Hughes goes to Chelsea? Pellegrini at Stoke alone. You heard it here first.
Football Manager 2018.
So we just touched on Manchester United there. We've just got too many United fans here. Your guys didn't sign anybody in the window. Was you disappointed by that?
Well, I'm not sure, because I think we're kind of in a similar but opposite situation to Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
In that I think Spurs showed good restraint in not signing anyone because they've got a really nice kind of rhythm and feel in their squad at the moment. Whereas I think United, we've already got too many cooks, it feels like. We need to kind of get things sorted before we added it even more. It would have been nice to add someone who really seemed to fit in, like Mane from Southampton, because he's got the pace to kind of come in from the right and score goals and create things. But at the same time, I think Van Gaal, I mean, depending on who you talk to in United fan base, Van Gaal is either already past his peak, which was like last season when we beat Liverpool, Aston Villa, Spurs, and it was very nice, or he still hasn't quite got there yet. And I think if he's gotten to the end of the season, he's kind of got to use what he's got to see whether he's getting there or he's already passed it.
It looks like things are starting to click a bit, though, the past few games. Definitely Anthony Martial, who was incredible against Stoke and against Derby County in the FA Cup. And Rooney's getting the goals again now. He's got 7-0 competitions in 2016.
I think Rooney's form is why Martial on the left is suddenly starting to work. Yes. I think when Rooney was just basically a passenger up front, Martial didn't have any link man to kind of feed him in from that kind of left-hand channel. And I actually think Martial, when the system's working, is great on the left. Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand why people want to see him up front, but when the system's working, and that's the whole point of having Van Gaal as your manager, it's really effective.
It's very much a performance that the last two performances have been very, very good. Anthony Martial, for me, has been a standout player, obviously. But I think credit to Juan Mata coming back into the side and having a really good relationship with Wayne Rooney. I think they understand each other's game. When Wayne Rooney comes deep and plays a sort of false nine role, Juan Mata's the player that's making that run forward. You look at the third goal United scored. Wayne Rooney pulled the centre-half out of position. Massive space for Juan Mata, who made that forward run. And I think with Ander Herrera there or Marouane Fellaini, they're all coming to the ball and Juan Mata is going the other way. And that's why I think Juan Mata needs to be in the side for the rest of the season. In going back to Martial, you know, put a performance in that was very like an Iron Robin performance on the other side, you know, coming on the left, coming in on his right foot. Look at his last two games, scored one goal, got three assists, had eight shots and created 12 chances, and obviously picking up two Man of the Match awards. That is absolutely outstanding, and what a talent he is.
Definitely. So do you reckon you guys can maybe give it a top four push? You've got Spurs ahead of you.
It's so changeable, I don't know. Yeah. It's I've written so much about Van Gaal over the last 2 years, and just when you think it's clicked, it falls away again. Just when you think he's about to get sacked, something happens. It looks like it's going in the right direction again. So I don't want to make a prediction. If I'm honest, I can see us doing nothing. I can see us winning the title.
It's one of those seasons, isn't it?
Please, listeners, I'm not saying we're going to win the title. Yeah. That's very much the extreme.
I'm going to pull a Mark Lawrenson and just say they'll finish fifth and not really use any predictive powers at all. I'm just going to predict the table as it is right now. It's what all he does, really.
Leicester City winning the title.
Yeah, I'm going for that. Let's just keep the table as it is. Let's all go home. Let's call the season off now. But I think with Van Gaal, like, how much money do you give what is essentially a lame duck manager? Like, he's already had £250 million pounds spent. A quarter of a billion sounds fancier, but like, I think people will look back on his tenure and think, blimey, you got Anthony Martial for £35 million pounds. He's done very, very well there. Like, people always say with Van Gaal, he does leave a legacy.
Yeah.
And you've got people like Cameron Borthwick-Jackson, Paddy McNair, people he's given a chance to. He's given hands so many first team debuts for young players. I don't think you'll really appreciate the job Van Gaal's done until he's gone, or 2-3 years after he's gone. Yeah. But saying that, I still don't think he'll ever win a trophy at United as United manager. I think he's too not his principles. Everyone makes out that he's this really principled person when it comes to styles of football, but he's changed them so much from the '90s. He's not the free flowing attacking manager now. He's almost gone into his shell. That's what happens. But if you stay in any job, when you want to revolutionise it, then you become the old-fashioned
pragmatic,
person.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure I agree with that. I think his style of football has, the principles of it have stayed the same, but the game has changed. There's a really good line in that. I think it was Roy Smith who said for the Times. Who said that it wasn't Roy Smith for the Times. It was somebody else. But they're saying that Van Gaal is like dial-up compared to Pep Guardiola's fiber optics.
Yes.
I think that there is an element of that in that he still
expects one player to do one thing.
Yeah.
Very well.
Yeah,
so and he looks in specialists rather than flexibility, which is what everyone needs.
But weirdly, he still wants a system to be of players that can kind of do everything. It's a bit of a contradiction. But the reason why it worked in the 90s is because everyone was building these big, big, hard teams that were all about power, and he tried to kind of undo them, basically, through possession football. Whereas the football's moved on, but Van Gaal has and he also hasn't, and I think that's where the problem comes from.
So, speaking of teams who are chasing the title, Arsenal. It's gone a bit wrong.
Definitely
in the past few weeks for Arsene Wenger. He only brought in Mohamed Elneny from Basel during the window. We haven't seen much of him. He's only played in the FA Cup so far. Has it all gone to pot again at the Emirates?
I think so, yeah. I think it's a massive missed opportunity. A real feel for Arsenal fans. I feel that this was the season. I feel with Pep coming in, it's going to be a bit of dominance for Man City for the next few years. And this was a real chance. They've got a number of wonderful players. I still hope Arsenal do win the league. Obviously, They have just fantastic players, you know, Ramsey, Cazorla. It's just getting injured, not getting injured. I think not signing Mbeule, you know, if he's available for $18 million, you're pushing for the title. Why not get him? Why not add him to your squad? Even though I think they've lacked, they probably should have gone for Higuain this summer. We all talk about that. Obviously, hindsight's a brilliant thing. Higuain 23 goals in 23 games in Serie A this season, but
at the start of, you know, when Sarri came in, obviously the Benitez transition, Higuain was thinking about his future. If Arsenal gone in there, whacked 50 mil on the table, were Napoli going to turn that down? Probably not. And we've seen the confidence Higuain's got from Sarri, you know, taking him to the side. You can win the Ballon d'Or talk. He got the start of the season. Wenger could have done that. Wenger could have been a similar manager, you know, put his arm around him. We all know your quality. You know, you've scored 3 goals every 4 games in Europe since you've been here. So what a player. I just think it's a missed opportunity in the summer. And again, in January, I just feel a bit, it's a bit of mismanagement, I think.
Is this not typical Arsenal though? They always seem to have these blips. They've had a few blips already this season and they bounce back. But is it too late to also win?
They still could win it. You know, I think we've seen that this Premier League season is so, so open. Obviously, Leicester play Man City this weekend, which is a big, big game. Arsenal pick up a win there, and those two maybe draw. It's bang on for Arsenal again. We've got Sanchez coming back into the team, which will help Mesut Özil. I think his form's a little bit dived off in 2016 after a wonderful 2015. So just getting the components back into that side. You know, you've got the likes of Theo Walcott. They've got great depth in the attacking sense, I think. But they haven't got that sort of the golden man, the Sergio. Imagine if Sergio Aguero was at Arsenal, they'd win the league.
Incredible. I personally don't think they miss a massive opportunity in January to sign anyone because there wasn't really anyone available that could have made that, could have improved their first 11. I do think, like, Arsenal fans are very guilty of lurching from one extreme to the other, but I think every other football fan is when it comes to Arsenal. It was just over a month ago they beat City 2-1.
Yes, you're
so
right.
So they've had four ropey games. Granted, but that's going to happen in a league season. But it doesn't mean every time they go for a little bad patch, they should just go out and slap 50 million on someone. I think they do have the squad. I think they've just got, like Dave said, they've just got to integrate their best players back into the 11 bit.
I think the problem, I would agree with that. And I think the problem that Arsenal have for me is they still haven't got a replacement for Coquelin when he gets injured. That's the big issue.
Yeah.
But as much as, I mean, I went on London Live for Squawker and said that they should have signed someone to replace that. But really, the problem with that was in the summer. Why did they get Schneiderlin? Why
the
did they allow
Schneiderlin? Always in the summer. They never do enough in the summer. No. It's not. I don't think it's January because no one does great business in January anymore. It's become sort of a benign window, essentially. Yeah.
And the way Wenger wants his team to play as well, it's all about intuition, chemistry. You don't get that in a January transfer window. You need a pre-season. You need the players to know each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I do understand why he hasn't signed anyone. It's just more the criticism of him failing to reinforce in January is more, it's a belated criticism of the summer, I think. They just haven't. It's like Wenger just doesn't believe his own injury record. And I think the problem's also at the back as well. I mean, Mertesacker's got some great qualities, but I don't trust Callum Chambers as a backup centre-back at the moment. And I think they are short there as well. If they get a bad injury to Koscielny, I trust, to some extent, Koscielny and Gabriel. Gabriel and Mertesacker, I don't know. I think there's problems there, and I think there's problems with Coquelin.
Yeah.
I think they're okay with Giroud, personally.
Yeah, they did manage to get rid of Matthew Djibouti. Went to Bordeaux though, so.
Almost came to United.
Oh god, that was rumour going around, wasn't it?
Payback for Mikel Silvestre.
What about the rest of the league then? Chelsea bought in some interesting players. They've got Matt Miazga from New York Red Bulls. He's a young United States defender. I don't know much about him.
Never play for Chelsea ever. Not even once.
I think the loan squad.
Yeah.
The chances that if Cahill really does want to go, which may change now, Terry isn't going to get his contract apparently, but although that may well change as well. I guess he's going to be more like squad fodder, really.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, now that Mourinho's not there, he might get more of a chance. I think there was a bit of an issue with Emenala's players and Mourinho's kind of judgment on them.
More curiously, they managed to get Alexander Pato on loan. Is he the player he was?
He looks like an absolute pudding now. Have you seen the size of him? I'm excited to see what he can do because he's obviously extremely talented, but he's just got to hit the gym for a bit. He's not. I'm sure he's still fairly quick, but he's been playing in a bit more of a withdrawn role for Sao Paulo. Mm. His goal record's more 1-3 than 1-2.
Yeah,
but he might be the different player everyone expects. He might be the supply line in the number 10 role for Costa rather than the alternative.
He looks to me like a child star who used to be in Dawson's Creek in the 90s and has now just exploded in a Hollywood production role or something.
He's a James Van Der Beek of football.
Absolutely, absolutely. But I do agree that he might be an interesting option, almost like behind Costa instead. I mean, Hazard still isn't up to speed yet, and I think I don't think people having a go at Hazard are correct. I think he's actually exhausted. He's played so much football over the last 2 to 3 years, and it's been like season over, summer football to play, whether it's youth stuff or the World Cup and all things with Belgium. So I think, you know, having Pato there, maybe to step into Hazard's role a bit more, that'll help Chelsea in the long run.
I think Hazard potentially, Chelsea didn't suit him towards the end of the tenure of Mourinho. I feel like it was all Hazard had to be the one to make that difference. And I feel he moved to a team that's going to keep the ball a bit more, like a Juventus or any of the top, the rest of the super clubs. You're talking Bayern Munich or Barcelona or Real Madrid. I think he'll excel again, and I think it's just obviously like he is definitely going to be tired. Mm-hmm. But then the Euros in the summer again, so that's another tournament. So when is he going to have that rest? On Pato, it's good, like Maka said. One goal in every three games in Brazil, 20 goals in 62 games and 10 assists. So he's still got some input, but then maybe he needs to hit the gym before he can get back to the sort of Pato versus Barcelona where he was charging around, taking on that Barcelona defence. So could be an interesting signing. It could work, but I do think it's not going to work.
I think it was pretty telling that Sao Paulo and Corinthians both were quite keen to
get rid of him.
And there wasn't, the Chelsea didn't really beat anyone to him either. There was no really much else really.
Chinese clubs apparently, they were the ones.
That's just, apparently they turned down a £15 million bid from China. But that's just an irrelevance when you think about it. They're just doing it for a name, aren't they?
Well, I think Pato did it actually. I think his club were quite all right with him going for that much.
Apparently they were livid that he turned down the wages because they couldn't get the fee from China.
Are there any other deals from the rest of the Premier League that caught our eye? Liverpool didn't do a whole lot. Newcastle obviously spent a lot of money bringing in like four players.
I mean, Juan and Turbe to Bournemouth. I mean, we really hope it will be as much as good as we all hopeful manager have told us it will be, because he's meant to be the next Messi, as many other players have been. But it'd be great. I mean, Bournemouth have lost so many of their kind of clever, tricky dribblers through injury. It's kind of nice, I mean, to see them go and get someone who can kind of fit that niche in their squad that's been lost. And plus, I like Eddie Howe's team, and I would quite like them to stay in the Premier League. And having someone with a bit more flair to kind of perk up their football in the second half of the season, I'm really hoping that works out for them.
I think Turbe is a fantastic signing for them. When he was at Verona, he was absolutely instrumental in their sort of survival season after season. But he only played 90 minutes for Roma when he was there, so maybe it was the wrong move for him, thinking of all the attackers that were there at that time. So it's an interesting one. Decent from set pieces of the season when he did very well for Verona, 2013-14. He scored more set pieces than any other player. He scored 3 set pieces in the league, so pretty decent, and he's obviously the creative spark, very, very fast dribbler. It's going to suit an Eddie Howe team, a possession-based team that needs that injection of pace in the final third. I do also like the signing of Afobe and Graben, two very pacey forwards. Obviously, they need to replace Karan Chambers, a player that scored five goals from 8 shots until he got injured. So, and he was looking good, stretching defences, and I think it's a smart move from Bournemouth, smart money.
I think Newcastle have bought very well. They've almost sort of spent a lot of money like they think they're already down. Like, it looks on the surface like they're panic buying. But Andros Townsend, if you keep him fit, does have end product.
Yeah.
Jandre Shelvey, they didn't ever really replace Kabay's range of passing in midfield. Shelvey certainly has that. Speaking as a Liverpool fan, I was always very disappointed we got rid of Shelvey when we did, because I think there's a lot of potential. I don't think he's a top 4 player. Don't necessarily think he's an England starter, but I think he has like a rare ability to occasionally take a game by the scruff of the neck. And that's what you need down there. He's a match winner. And for 12 million, I think that's a pretty good deal.
Definitely. There's a stat going around that Bournemouth, Norwich and Watford made up 39% of the spend in January, which is staggering for 3 promoted teams.
It just shows you what's on offer with the new TV money. Like, they have to stay up. Like, Norwich spending £8.5 million on Stephen Naismith, £8.5 million on Timo Klose. That is their club record signing that they've equaled twice in one window. And I think Stephen Naismith's a fantastic signing for Norwich.
Cool. So let's have a look at what else is going on around Europe and the rest of the world. We saw Stephen Fletcher go to Marseille.
Bizarre.
What on earth's happened there?
Marseille have this history with English players. Yeah. They just pluck strange English players up. They had Tyrone Mears on loan.
Yeah.
They signed Joey Barton on loan. Now Stephen Fletcher on loan. Like, I'm not really entirely sure what they're playing at. Joey Barton came out himself and said, I don't think Stephen Fletcher's going to play that much. Thanks, mate. But his goal record in the Premier League is about 1 in 3, and he's not played for big teams. He's played for Wolves, played for Sunderland, he's played for Burnley. So 1 in 3, in sides that don't score that many, when he's mainly an aerial presence, is a tidy record, really.
Well, I also think he's more than aerial presence. I think even though he's a British centre-forward.
Good footballer, isn't
he? He's got a very nice touch on him. He's not actually bad in small spaces. I mean, for Wolves, for Sunderland, he's always been, when he's been fit, which has been the big problem with Fletcher, he's always been quite a classy presence, actually, up front. More so than you might imagine from, in the modern age, a Scottish centre-forward, which,
With ears like that.
Absolutely.
It's bizarre to think that Marseille last season had players like Payet, they had Gignac, they had Andre Ayew, and they had Max Bielsa as a manager, and now they've got Stephen Fletcher.
What a transition.
Exactly. We also saw a lot of players go to China, which seemed quite curious and unusual, but there's a lot of money there. It's a league on the up. Is it the next MLS?
That's Jorge Mendes, isn't it, bringing the players over. You've seen a lot of Jorge Mendes' clients or him brokering deals for players to go over. Really interesting. If you're just thinking of the scale of the league, of how it's progressing in 2015, the rights for the TV deal was sold for $9 million. And a company's now bought that. China Media Capital have now secured the rights for the next 5 years for $1.25 billion. So that's the scale. It's absolutely crazy how much they're ramping it up. The average attendance in the 2015 season was 22,193 people there, which ranks closely behind Syria and Ligue 1. So we're seeing a massive growth in China. And it's really interesting because they have, obviously, it's a massive country. If they can get the youth development right there, we'll see China sort of really flying up the rankings and becoming a dominant force on the world stage.
It does seem like they've finally got the formula right. And I think you look at any industry or kind of thing that, that China, as like a culture of frivolity, they want to like perfect it and be the best. And basically just see the project through until they get there. And I think, I don't think it's the new MLS, I think it's the new Premier League. I think give it enough time, I think in the same way that the Premier League's got all the money and is buying all the players, I think China's going to become the new centre of gravity for world football. Maybe not tomorrow, but I think that's the way it's going to go.
Well, the quality of players have attracted Ramirez, Freddy Guarin, Gavinho.
And managers as well.
Martinez.
Yeah.
Yeah, managers there, Sven-Goran Eriksson, well, Phil Scolari, Dan Petrescu.
Is there a Lippi style there as well?
I don't think so anymore.
Navarro got the job after him, then he got the sack.
Right.
And then I think it's, I can't remember who it is. It was another, I think it might be Donadoni's manager now.
Yeah.
Right, got you. But in the same way that, like, China's industry has just an economy has grown at such a rapid pace. It's almost like they've gone through all the phases of an emerging league faster than MLS have, faster than a lot of the European leagues did when they were first coming through and becoming more commercialised. It's like they've gone through like three decades in almost like 5 years. Well, I mean, you think when Drogba and Anelka went out there, it seems like a very different kind of situation to how it is now.
It's like smoke and mirrors as well. They were promised these big wages and then they were getting paid late and things like that. That doesn't seem to be an issue this time.
And part, I think part of the reason why things have improved, there was a massive corruption scandal in Chinese football and they went in hard on it. I think that there probably still are problems there that need sorting out, but I think there has been progress on that front. And that's meant that the money actually is there now.
Yeah.
And there is an actual interest in doing it right rather than, you know, making some money on the side. So, yeah, I think China are here to stay and they're only going to get more powerful.
Yeah, I read an article a couple of years back that said Bangladeshi cricket's on the way up. Because when they were first introduced to the ICC, made to play tests, they were getting battered every single time. But they have a population of 300 million, and it's a national sport, and there's a genuine passion for the game.
Yeah.
If you have a grassroots passion for the game in a country, which China seems to, and the MLS to a certain extent, had to create from scratch in certain cities and areas, then your league is on the way up. That's how you get, that's how you invest properly, is you have the fans in the first place.
You've got to remember as well, football ultimately, I mean, I know it's grown into every single part of pretty much every single society, but at its fundamental kind of source of what it is, it's an urban sport played mainly by large working class populations. And in America, it's always been a more suburban middle-class sport, and I think that has caused it not to quite get the traction it did in Europe to become this kind of this groundswell sport, which is just huge. It's all over Europe, and that's what's happened in China. Everybody plays on the street. There is actually like a fan culture. There's not just about like the Western teams, as there are in other countries like Indonesia. They're mad for the Western teams, not so much their local teams. In China, they're really starting to kind of engage with what's there rather than what's over here as well, and I think that is just going to make it continue to just get bigger and bigger and bigger.
I'm terrified they're going to sign Alex Teixeira for 50 million. Like, that can't happen. That can't be allowed to happen. There should be an embargo that he's not allowed to leave.
It falls great hope.
Yeah.
So we're coming towards the end of this here. There was a big result in Spain last night. Barcelona beat Valencia 7-0 in the first leg of the Copa del Rey semi-final. What's going on with Gary Neville? Is it just not clicking for him, or is there bigger issues at Valencia?
The squad's a complete mess. It's imbalanced. He's already had to change the captain, so there are no leaders in the dressing room. They don't really have a proper transfer policy. It's just whoever they fancy bringing in. So there's a lot of issues, systemic issues, which go back to his predecessor, Nuno Espirito. But word is from Spain that the fans aren't booing Neville. They know it's not his fault. This is their longest winless streak since going back to the mid-80s, I think it is. And what has been his saving grace has been his Copa del Rey form. He still hasn't won a game in the league yet, but getting humped 7-0 by Barca was always good. It was on the cards.
I wouldn't even say the problem is Nuno so much. It's probably Lim and kind of his regime in some way.
Got Neville the job in the first place.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. I think if you look at the other clubs and the other kind of sugar daddies that are coming to Spanish football to try and do a similar thing in the past, I mean, it all blew up at Malaga.
Yeah.
And I think in the same way that in the 90s, a lot of like people like Alan Sugar came into English football and thought, you know, oh, I'm a successful businessman. Throw enough money at this, we'll make it work. I think they've underestimated how unequal Spanish football is. It's all geared towards Barcelona and Real Madrid, and I think this idea that, you know, you can just throw money at it, it'll work, you know, I'm successful in this industry, I'll bring my skills to football, it's even more kind of a mess in Spanish football than when people try to do it in English football, because the playing field is so much more unbalanced.
Yeah,
we'll see how it goes for Gary in Spain. Just to wrap up, a funny little story that emerged after transfer deadline day was the Slovenian side, NK Domžale. I'm sorry if I pronounced that wrong. They advertised on LinkedIn, the sort of business social network site, that they were after a right back, and they managed to get in a player from Espanyol called Alvaro Brachi. And the coach of Domžale, Luka Elsner, said he had 150 player profiles submitted to his
It's just
page.
Football manager. It's just a search bar when you scan football manager. Like, would like to meet Colin almost. Yeah. Like, likes dogs, long walks on the beach, and can play right back is preferably what you're after.
But they also, it wasn't just that right back. They kind of put some, almost like what we'd write in an article. They kind of gave like a tactical kind of profile. We want an attacking fullback who can pull back. It's like, all right, fair enough.
Do we think any other team should use LinkedIn or LinkedIn, as my mother likes to call it?
Wow, LinkedIn. I can totally see Ed Woodward doing a kind of scouting, official scouting partner with LinkedIn for United. Maybe Bebo, because he wants to get that. You know,
oh yeah, get the youngsters.
Actually,
what's
the Chinese social network?
Sinoweibo.
There you go. That sounds right up Ed Street. Yeah. Well,
I think Aston Villa should use it, because they didn't get anybody and they're in big trouble.
Yeah, Remy Gard might be off already, which is a travesty. Yeah.
Maybe he'll be on LinkedIn.
He's so professional. He's like the most ultra professional man in the world, and you just feel for him a bit like he's been missold. Like busted flush, he's looked behind the curtain and it's all rotted away. He's like, oh, is this what I joined?
Poor bloke. So anyway, then we've come to the end of today's pod. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon. We're talking about some of the best young players in the world. You want to say goodbye, chaps?
Goodbye. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening.
Cheers. Bye.